Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Joining me today on Better Than I Found It is newly hired TCU men's golf coach Bill Alcorn. Bill, a former all-conference golfer here at Baylor, recently finished his first semester as head coach at TCU. Today, he and I talk about his team this year, about his time at the University of Oklahoma as an assistant coach previously, and also about being a student athlete here at Baylor. Bill is a quality young coach and a really good guy to boot. Enjoy the listen. Okay, everyone, join me in welcoming first-year TCU head men's golf coach Bill Alcorn to the podcast today. Hey, Bill, great to have you on.
Thanks, Mike. Really, really appreciate it. It's I've listened to however many episodes that you've produced. I think I've pretty much listened to about 95% of them, so excited to be on with you.
Well, my goal is to get just so many good young coaches and veterans as well, but I think you're really one of the good young coaches today in the game. You've had a lot of success pretty early on, but you're also a brand new and very young head coach. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, one thing you and I have in common besides Baylor, besides golf, is you grew up in Abilene, Texas. And my dad was born there in 1930. So 55 years later, you came along. I mean, what's it like growing in Abilene, Texas? I think it's one of the great towns in Texas.
You know, Abilene is phenomenal, and it's actually a sneaky, really good golf town. We got three or four really good courses there. You know, I moved to Abilene actually in seventh grade, so my early golf years were actually in a small town called DeRidder, Louisiana. We lived about a block off of the Parrish Country Club there, Beauregard Country Club, and so my dad loved the game. I played all sports growing up, but you know, I just really remember when my dad came home from work, he was a preacher. Around 4 or 5 o'clock, we'd just jump in a cart and drive over and hit balls and play. And then when we made the move to Abilene, started kind of paring down my sports and played golf kind of all the way through as well with basketball. But yeah, I mean, Charles Cootie out there at Diamondback was a big influence with me. Frank Johnson. We had great pros there at Abilene Country Club as well, where we were members of. You know, at the time, Fairway Oaks was its own country club, so I didn't go out there as much as I did Abilene Country Club. But now they're under the same banner. But man, really, really good golf out there. I played a lot with the older guys as well, and had some fun with my high school buddies as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. My dad always talked so fondly, and he and his brothers, Don and Ronnie, grew up there in Abilene. And my dad caddied at that Abilene Country Club. And there's a lot of it that still looks very much the same. I've got photos from when my dad was young and, mesquite trees, obviously. But that's a great place. What was your lowest score at Abilene Country Club?
Yeah, it wasn't ever something stupid low, probably about 62, which I feel like guys out there could shoot 59. But they've changed it to a par 70. I grew up with a par 71, and basically the first hole was a par 4. You just got lucky and should have made birdie or eagle on it every time you played it. But now it's a par 4, so, under par is a little less, impressive, I guess, as it once was. But, it's a great golf course. I thought it was a perfect place to grow up from a junior standpoint because it is short. But, you know, if I played it back when I was, 13, 14 years old, it was still kind of the perfect length, I thought. You know, the dog legs, I wasn't overpowering these dog legs that we do now. So, and the greens were always really, really good. So, great, great spot to play and grow up.
Yeah, I would agree. You mentioned point guard playing basketball. In the last 15 years when I was at Oklahoma State and then now at Baylor, I've recruited a lot of guys who played basketball in high school. I think it's a perfect complement to golf. And I think because you get to play basketball during the winter when the golf is kind of slowing down, but it keeps you in shape, keeps you in team competition. I mean, what were the things you loved about playing basketball that complemented golf?
Well, just being in a team environment, I've always loved being in the gym. There's something about the smells and just sweating and running and competing. I just love that. Of course, in Abilene, it's not always the perfect weather come January, February. So, that cold north wind is tough to be out on the golf course, but you obviously don't feel that in a warm gym. But no, it's great. Just the competitiveness that I think I have as a person, I just want to be in as many competitive environments as I could. Even when I played my golf at Baylor, I still did intramural basketball, still wanted to compete during the wintertime and loved doing that. So I just think the competitive juices for me is what really drew me to the game. And I guess I was decent enough at it. I wouldn't say I was good or great, but still love playing it and still enjoy playing and shooting with my son Ford, just front yard and doing whatever.
That's great. Well, another Baylor alum and a former Baylor golf coach, Tim Hobby, played basketball. He was a great basketball player. Actually played for Houston before he came to Baylor, played in the Final Four, and he played in the Masters. He's the only player that I know of who's played in both the Final Four and in the Masters tournament. Do you know of anybody? Can you think of anybody that might have done that?
Nope. I promise you, he's probably the only guy.
I would say that's got to be a rough thing to be able to pull that one off. But no, I've always thought basketball players make really good golfers because the seasons complement each other. You get to do both. And
Completely agree.
yeah, well, okay. Well, how did Greg Priest find you? I mean, you're a basketball player who was also a good golfer, but I know your parents were Baylor grads, so that probably pointed you this direction a little bit, but how did Greg find you?
Yeah, I would probably say through Tim Hobby. I mean, Tim actually did the more recruiting of me than I would say Greg did. But it's kind of funny going into my senior year, I kind of had narrowed it down to about four schools, and unfortunately, three of those schools lost their head coaches going into my senior year, and Baylor being one of them. So I really had no idea what I was going to do. It's not like now where we're committing as juniors, and you have that year to, you're committing as a junior or senior. Pretty much everything was done that fall of your senior year, and so it was different for me because I didn't know what direction I wanted to go. I loved basketball, and I even thought about playing basketball and golf at a smaller school together. Was contemplating that, but when Coach Priest ended up getting the job, we kind of picked back up our talks at Baylor, and it was probably late September or October where we kind of came to an agreement that that's where we wanted to be, and it was just a great fit. I couldn't have been more appreciative of the opportunity because Greg was, I guess we were his first recruiting class, and he was just trying to get numbers, I think. I mean, he did not see me play before he offered me a spot, so. Really, really thankful for that leap of faith with giving me a spot.
Well, who what were the other two schools that lost coaches that you were interested in?
Both Mississippi schools, Ole
Okay.
Miss and Mississippi State.
Wow.
So
That's
it
kind of
was
crazy how that all came about.
kind of fascinating. But so yeah, I didn't really know what direction I wanted to go, but yeah, luckily Greg Priest was there to kind of pick me up.
Yeah, it's great for Greg. Greg and I were, I think I've mentioned it on this podcast before, he and I were assistant coaches. He was at Texas and I was at Oklahoma State, and we recruited the same kids every summer. It's like we were beating each other over the heads with, this recruiting situation as assistant coaches. And Greg finally got the job here. And I remember him talking to me about the golf course they were building, Bear Ridge, and, all kinds of other things. But I also remember that being a pretty good first recruiting class, a lot of you. Do you remember? Can you kind of take me through the names of those guys that were in your recruiting class?
Really only me and Carmine Media were the ones kind of there for the long haul, but before that was Jeremy Alcorn came in, Jeremy Fry came in, You know, they played a lot of golf. I'm trying to think who else was in that class. Matt Briggs and Meckers and man, just a bunch of guys that were, yeah, a year older than I. Wes Williams, you know, played a lot of golf for us. But yeah, we came in with four, and then two others didn't last too long. But still, it was a great class. And then right after me, Colton Williams played a ton of golf, and Jeff Gerlich was another one that played a lot of golf early on too, and Weldon Martin got in there as well. So we had a really good group of guys just kind of surrounding my class.
Yeah, you did. Jeremy Alcorn, obviously Alcorn, no relation, different spelling, but Jeremy's my assistant now and he's doing a great job. And I know he was your teammate for years and was an All-American as well. So great memories from college. What stands out? I'm going to mention your senior year at Prairie Dunes, but other than that, what type of memories stand out at Baylor?
Man, really just being with the guys, you know, our golf teams, we were kind of up and down at times. I know my first year was probably our best year. My freshman playing year, I redshirted 1 year, but the first year I got to play a lot. We were really good. Ryan Boccia was having a great year, and so was Jeremy as well. And well, both Jeremy's. Hey, we were probably better that year than any other year that I was there. But man, just being with the guys, and my whole experience at Baylor was phenomenal, and loved my time there. But yeah, you know, coming down the stretch, started playing some really good golf my senior semester, or my last semester, spring semester, kind of culminated at the Big 12 Championship, and unfortunately, I went up to Stillwater with my team for regionals, and had the most random thing happen on that nasty Zoysia that you had up there, Coach, that just hurt my wrist in the middle of number six fairway in the practice round, and physically could not hold a club in my right hand, and hated that that was the way that we ended. But I had to be on the sideline for my guys, and they nearly got us to nationals that year. I think we were 4 or 5 shots back, but hated not being able to compete that final event with them.
Yeah, I remember that event. I remember it rained 17 of the 20 days leading up to that event. It was the wettest golf course I've ever seen, too.
Yeah, it was playing long.
Yeah, it was. So you mentioned redshirt. A lot of kids think that that's a bad thing. When I had Alan Bratton on here, you know, within the last year, he talked about what a value it was for him to redshirt. What value did you get out of it?
Well, what I loved about growing up, you know, in Abilene and playing other sports, I mean, I never had a instructor. In fact, I never took a lesson until after my freshman year at Baylor. I started seeing Dana Bellinger up here in Fort Worth, and so I needed instruction. I needed to figure out. You know, I was never probably properly fit for clubs. I just kind of figured it out. So I remember going to school with the spinniest driver in the world, probably spinning at 3,500 on a good drive, and you know, getting fit that first year, just figuring out the important little nuances of the game. I was behind everybody, so I really needed it, and really taking 5 years through school helped me space out my classes to where I was able to play a lot of golf in the summertime. And I think I just continued to get better throughout my college career because of the amount of tournament rounds I played in the summer and wintertime.
Yeah. So the red shirt year has a negative connotation for some kids because they think, well, I'm not good enough or maybe I'm not ready, but it's about getting better. That's what it's really about. It sounds like you made a big progress that year.
I would think so, and I would hope that for all the guys that have redshirted for us before, because it's an unbelievable opportunity to have all the resources at your disposal that these great universities have, and you need to take advantage of them in the weight room, nutritionally, and then obviously being around better players and picking up what they do great, and where you can benefit from your teammates and get better just by being with them.
You mentioned resources, and obviously a lot of money's been poured into Division I golf programs all across the country. But one of the resources you mentioned was Dana Ballinger. He is truly, was truly one of the great men in all of golf that I've ever met at any given time. Wonderful instructor and a great person. That had to be a benefit for you.
Yeah, without a doubt. Carmine, who I mentioned was my teammate, he'd been seeing Dana for a while. And my freshman year, knowing I needed to go see someone, he was like, man, come with me to a lesson. So I did. And just immediately, I feel like we were kind of two peas in a pod, me and Dana. I mean, even though the year gap, it was pretty drastic. But he, in my opinion, he kind of epitomizes what a Texas instructor was. You know, always wore khakis with a Western belt, you know, tennis shoes, and was just a very calming influence to my game. You know, whether it was if I gave him a call just distraught about a tournament, or I feel like most of our lessons, if they were an hour long, about 20 to 30 minutes was just us sitting and talking, catching up on life. Dana, I love him dearly and miss him dearly. He was the only instructor I really took for any swing instruction. And when he passed several years ago, it was missed. And I know he's missed and loved by a lot, not only here in Fort Worth, but throughout Texas.
Yeah. And when young kids that might be listening to this podcast, when you're searching for an instructor, it is about the golf. It's about what he can teach you technically, but truly the mentorship is valuable. And a lot of kids overlook that, or parents overlook it, realizing, you know, you're still raising a kid. You're not raising a golfer, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I catch myself saying many of the things that Dana said throughout our lessons. He will always be a big presence. Of course, he was a volunteer assistant for TCU for a very, very long time. I feel very, very blessed to be here at TCU currently, and also get to kind of carry on his legacy of instruction with our current guys.
That's great. Well, you know, another thing you mentioned was grades and going through school and able to space that out a little bit better. You were actually an academic All-American a couple of years here at Baylor. I think that's one of the things that gets lost. You can be an all-conference golfer like you were, but also and academically you can be strong. I know that you're probably expecting similar things out of your players.
Yeah, I really think how you do one thing is how you do everything. And, if you're lazy in the classroom, there's a pretty good tendency you're going to be lazy and not get up super early on the weekends to get your work in and do what you need to do. So I do think there's a correlation. I do understand, though, that school comes harder to some people. I think, though, if you just give the effort that you put into golf, into your studies, everything will be taken care of.
That's great. We mentioned this earlier briefly, but your senior year, you started playing really, really well that spring semester. And I was coaching at Oklahoma State at the time, and we had the number one team in the country, had a bunch of good players. And you almost took down one of the best players in the country, Morgan Hoffman. He won the tournament. You finished runner-up. What are your memories from that week at Prairie Dunes, other than the fact it was about 35 degrees?
It was, and not only 35, but raining and windy. I wasn't very long in college. We maybe talk about that coming up, but did a lot of speed work outside of that. But I remember that week just keeping the ball in play, keeping it in the short grass, and being very, very good around those greens. I don't think I hit just a ton of greens. But, you know, I did play a championship there in my sophomore year. I was very fortunate enough to play in all four conference championships. I got to repeat, I guess, play twice at Prairie Dunes. And so was very familiar with the golf course going into my senior year. And the weather was, I would say, to my advantage. It was nasty. And I think I remember shooting two under par the first round, and maybe one over par the second round of that 36 hole day. Having a lead right away. And I think I finished up shooting even the next two rounds, which were not bad at all. But I couldn't tell you what Morgan shot that final round, but it was an unbelievable round to end up clipping me. But yeah, it was great experience. I do remember that last round maybe being a washout because of the amount of rain that we got overnight, and there being some standing water, I guess, on greens, and you know, it just took a long time to play that round just because you were taking taking unplayables from not unplayables, but getting relief from casual water kind of all over that golf course. So pretty uncommon for springtime for them to get that much rain that they got.
Well, that, and it's the sand base that golf course has. We got a lot of rain that year for us to have that much standing water. That was kind of crazy, but I do remember that very well. You obviously finished up that spring, and you played pro golf for a few years, and with mixed results, some good results in there, I know. But you came to me the summer I got the job at Baylor and sat in my office and said, Coach, and this is referring to something you mentioned earlier about length off the tee. You said, Coach, I'm kind of creating this little system of my own, a system of working out where I can create some speed. And I'd like to use the facility here during the winter when I'm, after tour school. Is that possible? I said, absolutely. And then the rest is history, as they say, because when I saw what you were working on, I knew it would benefit some of my players.
Yeah, it was. You know, the professional career was a lot of fun. I mean, I played all over the country, but I really got to a point where I was having success on many tours, but couldn't quite get through on the Korn Ferry Tour, and was kind of searching for what's the next step in my evolution of my golf game, and put a lot of stock. This would have been 2014-ish, maybe 15-ish.
14.
This is before, Bryson was doing his thing and Phil was doing his thing. And so I really started researching, and there was a lot of baseball research out there too, with increasing bat speed, and just tried to put together what I thought was going to be a really good program for someone to increase club head speed. And so I went and saw some folks too that were kind of doing some stuff, and kind of made it my own to some degree of what I thought could be very beneficial, and started seeing some results for myself. I know it's kind of unorthodox looking whenever you kind of saw some of the things, but whenever I got the opportunity, I guess you came to me, was that 2016 or so in my off season? Does that sound right?
You worked out that fall of and winter of 2014-15, but the next year I had you, I just took you on as my volunteer assistant. If you were going to be there anyway, may as well work our guys out. And there was one player, Hunter Shattuck, who I think you changed his life. I truly do. Honestly do. So,
well, yeah, that was so much fun. And talking about getting into coaching too, that was my first, I think I worked with six guys that winter time in between my off season. For me, I saw an increase of club head speed of about 6 to 7 miles per hour and about 24 yards of carry increase whenever I was going through that whole process. But man, those guys that worked, we had Cobra was there. Trying to think.
Hunter Shattuck.
Hunter Shattuck.
Braden Bailey.
Perrine, I think, was also in there.
Exactly.
I know I'm leaving somebody else out. Sorry, guys. But I think three of those guys in about a 6 to 8 week period saw an increase of about 30 yard increase off the tee, and it just blew me away. I could not believe what I was seeing. And that's when I kind of thought that I might be on to something with working basically 5 days a week with your guys on it. If we really focused and did things the right way, we could see some tremendous speed increases. And to their credit, they put in the work, they did everything that was asked of them and plus more. And I agree with Hunter, it was a game changer.
Oh boy. I mean, Hunter, he'll tell you to this day that changed. Now Hunter did the work. System wasn't going to help anybody if they didn't work, right?
Correct. There's no pill. Yeah. You got to do the work.
Yeah, he did it, and he was one of the biggest reasons we made match play the following year at the national championship. But yeah, I think that first coaching experience right there, even though it was small, you were just a volunteer and you weren't working with their golf, you were just working them out. You know, after that second year you worked with us, you played mini tour golf for a few more months, but you'd already kind of decided you were going to get into coaching, and then along came Ryan Hibble.
Yeah, very interesting. I like sharing this because I think a lot of folks that are getting into coaching maybe in a similar spot where I was. You know, I played for 8 years, and I told me and Mallory sat down. You know, this golf fitness thing was picking up traction. I was helping other schools and helping other players with that. You know, I still loved playing. I loved competing, but also the coaching aspect of it. I really did love working with those Baylor guys and figuring that out. So going into Q school that year, you know, it was either, hey, look, if we get status on Korn Ferry Tour, I'm going to keep playing. If not, I'm going to explore one of these other options. And so I really do believe God had a hand in that, because I think 19 got out of my second stage to go get status or go to final stage of Korn Ferry. And I remember finished 20th. And so either one shot or one person basically changed the course of my direction to coaching. And, you know, I wouldn't change that for the world. But, you know, going into that summer, that would have been summer 2017, I played a full spring schedule. And we just had Millie, which was my second child. And so, yeah, looking for opportunities there. You know, Coach, I was told no by five different coaches before Ryan Hibble went ahead and said, hey, Bill, I'd love for you to come up to Norman. So to me, that I've always remembered that, because I don't know if it's healthy or not, but I've always liked to coach with a little bit of an edge and play with a little bit of an edge. But I do know exactly where I was and spent those 6 years in Norman was exactly where I needed to be. Can't be more appreciative and thankful for Ryan and giving me that opportunity.
Yeah, that is an incredible opportunity when you think about it. You had been a volunteer, but you really hadn't had coaching experience. And then to get to go to one of the best teams in the country, working for one of the best coaches in the country right off the bat, that's a wonderful opportunity. And I know Ryan benefited from you being there, but I know you also benefited from him. A couple things. And I want to know more about Ryan Hibble. I'm trying to get some secrets here, so you're going to have to give me some. But, you know, one thing about it, Quade Cummins, who was an All-American at the University of Oklahoma, had been playing fine, but just sputtering along, not necessarily playing his best golf. And he told me one time, he said, Coach Hibble's a great coach. And he didn't tell me what you said, but he said something you said changed the trajectory of his career in college. And Ryan Hibble agreed with it. You just spoke different words to him, and I think it worked. Do you remember what you said? And if not, do you remember that something changed with him?
You know, he was a guy that, you know, big body, could move the ball. I came in my he would have been – this would have been his second year in the fall of 2017. And you know, he was talented, but you could tell that he just was, there was no belief. And honestly, you know, Quade never told me whatever I said. And I do not remember at all about this conversation. And I think that just speaks to the power of what we have as coaches. You know, our words really do affect people one direction or another. I mean, we're in a position of influence and really need to be careful with what we say. And you know, he has mentioned that to me, and I couldn't tell you what I said to him, but I really do believe that I tell my kids this every day when they go to school, find ways to add value to people, and I really try to do that around my players every day, and whether that's saying something to them or just putting your arm around them when they need an arm around them, or you know, kicking them in the butt when they need to kick in the butt. I mean, it's knowing what to say, when to say, and you know, I know I've probably put my foot in my mouth more times than not too, but yeah, it was nice to hear Quade say that. Quade did not play much for us at all in that fall of 2017. And when he did, it wasn't very good. But, man, he flipped a switch that wintertime and became an All-American that springtime and had a great year. I think I walked maybe every round with him that spring semester. But, yeah, he was a phenomenal golfer, four-time All-American, ended up playing 6 years at OU. And really, if you were around college golf during that time period, you knew who Quade Cummins was.
Absolutely, you did. You know, I kind of liken that a little bit to when I went to Alabama as an assistant. J.C. Wills said, "You see that big tall kid over there?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "That's Trey." And he goes, "Yeah." He said, "I'm just going to put you with him this fall, see what you can do." Because he just thought a different voice speaking into Trey. And, I mean, Trey took off. He was listening. A lot of it, what you experienced with Quade and what I experienced with Trey – is also a willing student or a willing, you know, person to listen to what you've got to say too. And Trey was all ears, and I'm not taking any credit for that other than I was speaking a different language to him. And Jay appreciated that, but Jay was also smart enough to put me with him. And, but anyway, Quade told me personally, he says, "Yeah, when my career changed when Bill Alcorn got here," and I said, "Wow, that's amazing." But you know, we're speaking about like you made all the difference in the world. You made a difference for sure. The one of the better coaches in college golf is Ryan Hibble. I want to know what you think makes him a great coach. What are his attributes that have made him so successful? I think I know what I see, but you were there every day for 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, he is a guy that always. He knows where the North Star is for the program and what we got to do to get there. And, you know, obviously he's extremely competitive. And I think that's one of the reasons why we got along pretty quickly, was that competitive drive between both of us. Losing does not sit well with both of us. So I think that was another thing too, but, you know, he's obviously a great player himself but extremely, I don't think I've been around a guy who knows more around the greens than Hibble does with being on the greens putting wise and then just short game wise. And that's where I think our guys continue to get better at OU was that competitive nature around the greens that he was able to create and that we were able to kind of manifest. But no, I mean, outside of golf, couple things just off the top of my head. I mean, he always did things the right way. One thing that we always wanted to do was do things differently than other people. Like, how could we stand out? And so when golf camps became a thing, we were the first to kind of jump on the golf camp train when social media, you know, we challenged ourselves to how can we make our social media, the best social media in the country. And then same thing with our booster club. It was, how can we turn this thing into a monster? And so he's just a big thinker that, you know, I know they're making some changes to their facility now and it's going to be awesome. But, you know, off the golf course too, I mean, the guy, he was exactly what I needed, to kind of show what a father looked like and being a coach. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got two girls that are about 5-6 years ahead of my kids. And so, you know, I got to kind of see what that looked like. And I really needed to see what that looked like. Cause, you know, I know there's some coaches that constantly bury themselves in work and we just weren't like that at Oklahoma. I mean, if one of our kids had a soccer game or, you know, softball game, baseball game, I mean, we would sneak off to go watch that game. And you know, we weren't getting into the office super, super early. I mean, we wanted to take our kids to school and spend some time with them when we could. And, you know, our off days were off days. So I really appreciate him valuing that family time and allowing me to experience that and seeing what that looks like from being a very competitive coach, but also valuing that family time.
Love that. Absolutely love that. And I've witnessed that. He talks about his girls all the time. He talks about his wife all the time. So he obviously he's a great family man, but he's a great golf coach. Glad to hear all that. Speaking of coaches, this summer you had to hire an assistant coach, and I know you had a lot of people very interested in that position. You hired Cole Buck, a TCU golf alum, as your assistant. I think he's a terrific young coach. I think that's a great hire on your part. But what are qualities that he has that drew you to him, besides the fact he was a TCU Horned Frog?
Yeah, I mean that was obviously a big pull, but I wanted to be open with this hire, just like I feel like Hibble was. I mean, I didn't know him. I didn't know Hibble from Adam, and he didn't know me. You were the link between us there. So thank you for that. Getting my foot in the door up there at OU. But so I wanted to be open with my search, and so I asked the guys. I kept asking around the TCU network, who do you think would be a great fit here? And Cole Buck's name kept coming up and kept coming up. And so I was like, all right, I got to get to, I mean, I knew Cole, but not knew him. I mean, we were friendly, just saying hi. But when I dug in there, he's got a heart for more than just golf with these guys. He really wants to dig in and get to know them, just make them better people. And he knows the game really, really well. He came from Stanford, and they, man, they got a great program. They've been great. He's been around awesome players, and of course, Conrad's phenomenal over there, doing a great job. So he came from a big program that was doing things differently than what we were doing at Oklahoma. So I knew he had a different perspective on what a good team looked like than I did. And so it's really been a great compliment. I mean, listen him talk to our guys. Sometimes I don't want to say anything and just let Cole lead the meetings, because he does such a good job speaking and relating with our guys, and I really think that's valuable. So there's a ton of attributes that he has that makes him great, and his wife is fantastic too. They're super super invested in the community and have great ties here in Fort Worth, and he's been super helpful, connecting me with former players from his era whenever he played here. So it's kind of neat. I got done playing in 2009 college-wise, and then he started playing, I guess, in 2013-ish. And so, he was able to bridge that gap between the guys that I wasn't around. And then, I kind of picked back up with the guys that I knew from whenever I got back in coaching in 2017. So we really were able to kind of cover a lot of ground in the 2000s with our age gap, being here at TCU.
Yeah, I actually corresponded with Cole when I was still at Oklahoma State. I knew who he was, and he was working with a guy that I knew really well on his golf game. So anyway, I've known him for a long, long time. Great hire, good job there, and we're going to see a lot of you guys. So looking forward to that. Tell me about your current team. These are all basically guys you inherited, not all of them maybe, but just tell me a little bit about your team, your makeup.
Yeah, we got three seniors on the roster. Gustav Fremont is, gosh, I think he's the top 25 player in the world right now. He had an unbelievable summer, came in and played some good golf too for us, and really excited to see. He's in a good position on PGA Tour U, and can't speak enough about his leadership too this year. It's been really, really solid. Chris Berzina, same way, and Brandon Massey, just great, great attitudes coming in. They both played for us a little bit and played for our team, played for TCU in the past, so they have a little experience there. But man, really outside of that, we're young and got a couple sophomores, Ethan Dial and Jack Beachum, that have played a lot of golf for us, and then or played a lot of golf for us this year, but haven't played just a ton. So we're learning a lot about, the routines of tournament golf, being super competitive, what that looks like, still being smart but not overwhelmed by the moment. And then I have roughly five or six freshmen, I guess, if you consider, redshirt freshmen on the same boat. So we got a really, really young team with a, I think, a very, very bright future. So we just completed our fall schedule, wrapped up at the Big 12 match play this week, and I can't wait to get to work with our guys, starting Monday on how to get better, because you know how quick college golf happens for us in the fall time with tournament golf. So you don't really get to dig in with your guys like you want to until that fall semester is over. So this first off season for us is going to be really, really big, setting the tone and understanding what our expectations are and how we're supposed to work.
You know, that's amazing. Like, there really isn't an off season. It's just another season. It truly is. You know, that's just semantics, but I was in the office a couple of weeks ago with one of my players, Zach Heffernan, and Zach was talking about, he said, "Coach, you told me when I first got here that it's going to go by so fast and I have to take advantage of every opportunity. And Coach, I'm already almost two and a half years in. I can't believe it." And it goes by so fast, these young freshmen need to know how fast it goes.
Yeah, you try to prepare them, and especially from a school standpoint, because, you know, the freshmen that do travel with you, that first semester is a blur to them because they're missing so much class and trying to catch up and meet with tutors and learning specialists and all this stuff just to keep their head on straight. But, you know, I think we're at that point in the semester where hopefully everything kind of slows down for them. They get their grades in a great spot, and, you know, we're ready to kind of tackle what's next for us.
Well, and you mentioned your team real quick. I want to not gloss over this. You guys in your very first tournament, the Valero Texas Collegiate at TPC San Antonio, you all were leading in the last round at one point. We were playing with you, and you finished second. We finished third. Vanderbilt, who may be the best team in the country, won the title. But that had to be exciting in your very first collegiate tournament as a head coach to have your team with a chance to beat one of the top teams in the country.
Oh, Vanderbilt's phenomenal. We were looking it up. I mean, I think all five of their guys that played that week were inside the top maybe 35 of Wagner. I mean, just an incredible stat. So they're going to be, you know, if not the best team in the country, one of the best teams in the country this year. And, yeah, I mean, we were leading going into really the last five holes, and I think they just made eight or nine birdies in the last five holes and just kind of got by us. But, that was a great week for us. I think coming out of the gates, the folks at the Valero did a phenomenal job, but it was really, really fun competing, not knowing what I had as a roster, because really, you know, I've been with the guys in qualifying, but I've never seen any of them really play up close in tournament golf, and so that was really fun for me to experience, and I know for Coach Buck as well. And you know, since then, we didn't have just a great, you know, couple of the tournaments this fall, but you know, I really do like where we're headed. But yeah, that first week was pretty special.
Excellent. Well, you're still a young man. You really are. But you entered college coaching a little bit later. A lot of kids are, you know, coming out of college, maybe playing 1 year of mini tour golf and then getting into the coaching profession. And young kids all the time ask me, you know, how do I get to where you are, Coach McGraw? How would I do that? And I keep on telling them, wait a second, we've got to have a little patience here. You're 25. What would you say to a young 25-year-old who's saying, Coach Alcorn, I want to be where you are? What would you tell him? What's the best advice you have for him?
I think first off, you know, a lot of these programs do run camps. I would say get around great coaches as much as you can. So, and the camp environment is a phenomenal way to do that. Just listening to the way coaches talk. And I think if you want to be great, you got to surround yourself by great people. And I've been very, very fortunate in my career to always be around top-notch coaches. Even growing up in different sports, I had great coaches that were massive influences on me. But I do think one thing that's important is to figure out one area to stand out in, whether that's, you know, for me, it was kind of the golf fitness angle and creating club head speed, that type of stuff that maybe got on, you know, Ryan's radar a little bit better than maybe some of the other guys. But I think find something that you think you can be better than other people at and become the best at it, whether that's green reading or becoming a short game guru or talking to people or leadership qualities, whatever you think you're good at, really dive into that and try to make it great and have yourself stand out.
Great advice. All right, now I'm going to have ask you to talk about yourself. This may not be very easy, but what's your best quality? And I'm going to can I say what I think it is first, and then you have to go from there?
That's going to be helpful. You're going to have to ask my players about that. So, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, okay, that may be the case. Yeah, maybe I'll need to ask your players, but I think you have a calming influence on players, and I think because of that, they trust you. And then once they realize you have a lot of knowledge, that certainly helps move that needle even more. So I think you have a calming influence. What would you say regarding that?
Probably so. I mean, my personality is to be more level. I feel like I do a pretty good job of getting the best out of my players. I mean, I don't know what that looks like or what I do to do that, but I hope that's my goal. At least that's my goal as a coach is to get players to believe that they're better than they are. And so, I really enjoy learning from other great coaches, and I read a lot, listen to a lot of podcasts, whether it's leadership podcast or coaching podcast. I love the growth of becoming a better coach, a better man, a better husband, a better father, and so I think that's something I'm always learning something new and stimulated in that way. So that maybe that helps answers your question a little
Yeah,
bit.
it does. I think lifelong learners are the most successful people in the world. It doesn't matter what, area of expertise we're talking about. Somebody who's constantly trying to learn and get better, then they don't have all the answers. They have the answers they have right now, but they know they're looking for more. So I think that's important and a good quality of yours as well. Okay. The last question I'm going to ask is what would be an area of growth for Bill Alcorn? How could you grow and be better?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when I got to Oklahoma, I was not on any social media. I was not, used to talking in front of people, and I'd say my time there, I kind of have to force myself to do social, and so I want to get better at that and learn to capture those moments better, and because so much is in our game with who we're recruiting and the demographic that we're reaching is glued to Instagram and TikTok and that type of stuff. And so I want to be better there, need to be better there. I did think, in fact, I remember the very first we had, it's called Sooner Open, big public, I guess fundraising event, golf tournament that we hosted at Oklahoma, and Hibble had me do some sort of talk, I guess, just thanking people and maybe even giving the winners out or something very simple. And I remember being nervous as a dog speaking in front of like 200, 250 people. But I think over time I got better and better. I think now I'm functional when I get in front of a crowd at least. But still need some growth there and looking forward to that as well. But I want to stay as young and as current with what's going on as possible. And I love the fact that we do get to spend so much time with our players, whether it's van rides or just traveling, and so that helps out, no doubt, in that regard.
Yeah, staying young, that's one of the things that I'm not going to say I struggle with, but that's why I have young assistant coaches. I really want to have them give me the pulse of what's going on with the younger generation. It wasn't that long ago I was that young assistant coach, but now obviously I have to work a little harder to find out where they're coming from, what perspectives they have that are different from what I had when I was their age. It's changing all the time. But no, that's great. Listen, Bill, I got to tell you, this has been enjoyable for me for a couple of reasons. One, I was fortunate enough to be sort of the first guy to get you in coaching, which I'm thrilled by, and I'm glad you're here. I did have a long talk with Ryan Hibble way back in 2017 at the US Junior about you, and I think Ryan made a good decision. I think you made a good decision to get into the coaching profession because I love what you do, and I'm going to love competing against you for the next several years of my career. So, thank you very much for that, and thanks for being on the podcast today.
Hey, you got it. Thank you, Coach. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, let's have a good off season, and I'll see you at Whispering Pines for sure in the spring.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Bill.